In this episode, I talk to Jordan Leal from Meme Protocol. I love this episode because I think Meme captures the current zeitgeist in DeFi like no other project. Meme started as a joke on Twitter a little more than a month ago and is now a serious project with a thriving community and an awesome product. We also talk extensively about NFTs, which are currently a very hot topic in the DeFi space. So I hope you'll enjoy this episode. But before we jump into the show, I want to thank our sponsor, Bitwala. Bitwala is Germany's crypto flagship company. They offer users in Europe a full-fledged bank account, including deposit insurance and other things, as well as an integrated Bitcoin and Ethereum wallet. So using Bitwala, you can move your money seamlessly between your euros and your crypto. They keep on adding new features, such as their recently launched Bitcoin interest account, allowing users to earn interest on their Bitcoin. I highly recommend you check them out. I will post a link in the show notes. Hey, Jordan, welcome to the Crypto Testers podcast.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, very excited to discuss the incredible meme story with you. It's funny, I normally have projects on the show that are at least like 1 or 2 years old, but meme definitely doesn't fall into that category. But nevertheless, when I look at the progress that meme has done over the last, I don't know, 4 weeks, it seems like you guys have been existing for 1 or 2 years as well. So yeah, really excited to talk to you. Of course, I followed the whole evolution on Twitter, but I really want to learn the insider story of meme. So yeah, but maybe let's start with who you are and how you got into this project.
Sure. Yeah. And it sure feels like a couple of years crammed into really just 1 month or 6 weeks. And they always say time moves faster in DeFi, and they weren't kidding. But yeah, so I actually am employed at Consensys, obviously a leader in the Web3 space and crypto space, especially when it comes to Ethereum. Prior to joining Consensys last year, I worked at a company called Total, T-O-T-L-E. They're a decentralized exchange aggregator or liquidity provider aggregating decentralized exchange trades. I served there as the chief product officer. Before that, just kind of been doing my own thing, working in a few different startups. I started a startup, created a mobile startup, and a few years ago sold that to JibJab. So JibJab is like almost like a pioneer of internet memes. They've been around for 2 decades now, and they've done a lot of cool things. So it was fun to get acquired by that company and then work there for a while. So I've always had this entrepreneur mode. Since being at Consensys, just over a year now, I've been leading kind of the product lead for a number of DeFi initiatives. When I joined, DeFi was a brand new hot thing. So it was exciting just to think, okay, what can we build in this space? I led a team. We built a number of products, but one of them is the DeFi Score. And it's this open source framework for analyzing risk across different DeFi protocols. We thought, you know, what does a ratings agency look like when it's on top of Ethereum? Can we have this decentralized open source ratings metric system? So that's what we built. And I've just been working on a couple different projects at Consensys and pretty active, at least in some DeFi circles on Twitter. So I come from this background of risk management in DeFi. Hmm. But by night, you know, I'm what some might consider a DeFi degen or a yield farmer. So it's walking this balance of, hey, if we want to grow, we need to make sure this thing is less risky. We need to make sure it's safe for average users. But then, you know, this small group of people are actually keeping these protocols running by yield farming and making trades and lending and taking out loans and participating in governance and everything. Yeah, so long story. I'll try to summarize it and we can dive into it if necessary. But it all started as a joke on Twitter. I posted this tweet. It was a fake screenshot of a product that kind of poked fun at Ethereum or DeFi development. And then that joke kind of spun out virally. I created a Telegram group just to continue the joke a little bit. And then out of that Telegram group, a token was minted, a community was born, and out came the meme project. So it was almost accidental that this meme project was created. It was quite a wild ride, a few days of crazy antics as part of this group. And it started out as just like a joke coin. But I thought, you know, we're in DeFi, a joke coin needs to be composable. So let's go build some products. So that's what we did. About a month ago, we launched our first product. The meme platform is all about NFT farming or NFT mining. So by locking up ERC-20 assets, you're able to mint or mine or farm NFTs, unique NFT art. And people seem to enjoy that. People seem to like it. We've got four pools now.
Sure.
A lot going on. So it's been a wild ride for sure, but lots of fun.
Yeah, me included. I also like it. But yeah, let's unpack this a little bit, because this tweet that you did, I think it was August 15th, or so, more than a month back, and you were kind of making a joke about all the yield farming that was going on, where basically new so-called farms would pop up every day and they would just clone existing contracts from the leading protocols like Compound, Synthetix, that had like battle-tested code. And then these farms would clone contracts from left and right and create something new. And so your tweet was kind of making a joke about all that. Can you explain what exactly you were kind of joking about?
Sure, yeah. So the actual content of the tweet was an image, was just this flat image that I had designed. So I'm a product person. I like to build products. I kind of lean towards the design and UX side of things. So no problem building like this fake mock-up of a product. And so that's what I did. I built this little mock-up of this pretend joke product. And what it was, so I called it the degenerator. So degenerator. And the whole idea was that it was this web app that allows anyone to spin up a DeFi protocol in under 5 minutes. And that's what that was the text in the tweet. So it allowed you to, you know, in this fake product, allowed you to, you know, choose a meme. So you start by choosing a meme, and then you select a couple contracts. So you choose, okay, you want a governance contract? Why don't you fork the Compound contract? Okay, you want a rebase contract? Why don't you do this? Okay, you want a staking contract? Why don't you take that from Synthetix? So it was almost like a WYSIWYG or a WordPress for protocol deployment.
Pretty genius idea, by the way.
Thank you. And it originally started as, hey, this it was commentary on a lot of these projects. And if you remember, this seems so far, it seems so long ago, but this was prior to Sushi and Pasta and all these food coin clones, right? This was right after Yam, the first release of Yam. Based had just come out. There was a number of projects right behind it. The Curve token launch had just happened. And if you remember, the Curve tokens were deployed by some random anonymous Twitter account. And so it was commentary on all that like, yo, this is crazy. How are we going to get people to onboard? How are we going to get the mainstream to onboard if we're doing stuff like this? So it was just satire.
It was actually quite visionary, because it was at the very beginning of this whole yield farming craze. There had only been a couple of projects of this genre, and you basically saw that all of these other farms were yet to come, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so someone else launched the meme token. Someone else deployed it. So you basically tweeted this out, included like, I think, a link to Notion with the mock-up of this degenerator interface. And then you, somewhere in the tweet, you also mentioned that the token would be called meme, and there was a pineapple icon or something. And then someone else went ahead and created a token called meme and deployed it, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that was all. Yeah, in that original mock-up, I just so happened to choose a pineapple because the meme is, you know, you choose a food icon. At least this was right after Yam. So it was, you know, choose a food icon. It just so happened to be that I chose the pineapple. So in this early days of the community, my intention with this Telegram group, I sent users to a Notion page. And then from the Notion page, I linked people to the Telegram group. And in that Telegram group, just a few dozen people initially, and someone had the broad idea to just go create a token. I don't know, you know, the whole idea wasn't anything specific. It was, hey, it would be fun just to tokenize this. And someone went out and created the meme token, and still no idea what would be behind it. We had some quick conversations. Should we call it the Degenerator? Well, no, because that kind of shuts us off to this, makes it really narrow in what this thing could be. What if we just opened it up and called it meme? That way we can do whatever we want with it, a little bit more, yeah, a little bit more vague and open. So someone went and did it. Like, this was crazy. This was like midnight or later my time on a Friday night. It was just insane. We were up all night just watching this community just go crazy, just run with it. It was completely out of my hands. This community just went and they said, we're going to go create a token. And then someone said, okay, I'll spin up a Google form. And there was the first form, which just allows you to drop in a wallet address. And then there was a second form that said, hey, the first form didn't really protect against people dropping in multiple addresses. We need to make sure that there's only one person per address. So they created a second form, which asked the user for the Telegram handle. The Telegram ID in addition to the wallet address. That way we can make sure. However, there were people that weren't really paying attention. So some people only filled in form one and they didn't fill in form two. So they weren't part of the airdrop.
That was a costly mistake.
Costly mistake in hindsight, but that quickly became a meme in the early days of the community. Form two versus form one, and there was a lot of form oneers that weren't too happy. But yeah, that gets into like how the tokens were originally distributed, and it was an airdrop. It's kind of in the last couple of days, it's kind of become a meme in and of itself, as a lot of like meme clones and a lot of like we saw what happened with Few. Many, like there's all these copycat clones that want to kick things off with an airdrop just to motivate a network. But this one was the first, and this was organic. There was no intention of, hey, this is what we're going to do. There was no, hey, I'm going to invite all my friends and this is going to be just something for my friends. This was completely organic, off a tweet. Didn't know anyone else that was part of the airdrop until we joined that group.
And I think also a big difference is that the link to the Telegram was public. It wasn't like a bunch of friends who were deciding who would get it. And let's pump this token. It was anyone could enter and anyone could claim the to be part of the airdrop, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it started to go towards this weird pump and dump territory, right? Because once the token was created, it was put up. There's added liquidity to Uniswap. It was up on CoinGecko really soon. This started to turn into like this is a thing, and people are gonna sell it, and people are gonna pump, they're gonna dump, and people were shilling it all over the place. And my name was attached to it, of course. One of just a few people, even to this day, that have their public name attached to it, kind of in the leadership group. And so I was like, hey, if my name's attached to this, I got to make sure that this doesn't end badly where people just get wrecked and my reputation is damaged. My personal brand is damaged. I'm attached to Consensus still. So we got to be careful about that. So when it started to head towards this pump and dump shill scam vibe, I fought hard to kind of bring it back around. And it was like, hey, no, we're going to be careful with this. We're going to build actual product. I quickly took to Twitter. I'm like, you guys, this is, be careful what you get into. This is very risky. This isn't a project yet. We're still in the early days. We're still trying to figure out what this is. Somebody mentioned that you shouldn't buy it. And then I quickly jumped in and I said, yeah, let's make that our slogan, hashtag don't buy meme. And that kind of spun off virally. And that became kind of our thing. I went and bought don'tbuymeme.com. And that's kind of our meme. That's kind of our slogan. That's our URL destination even now. So that kind of spun off on its own as well. So
and at what point did you settle on the current idea of meme? Because so the initial idea was the Degenerator, and then you deviated from that idea. Who had the idea of the current meme project? And then we'll go into what the current idea of meme is.
Yeah. So as mentioned, this was the original idea was that this was just going to be a joke coin or a meme coin, similar to Dogecoin. So the thought was it's Doge for DeFi. It's Doge 2020, where, you know, a coin can exist just being part of a community and the community kind of propels it. But that, you know, times change. That sort of thing doesn't really work these days. So my thought was, okay, if we're the Doge for DeFi, right? DeFi projects are composable, meaning they can be built off, they can borrow each other's code and they interact with each other's protocols. So this actually needs to be something. So in the early days, the community had a bunch of different ideas. Oh, we can go build a generator. Oh, we can go build this. We can go build that. What's something that's super memeable? So I believe it was one of our engineers, ET, came up with the concept of, you know, this was a bunch of people kind of throwing ideas against the wall. But at the end of the day, all that matters is what the developers decide to build. So our lead developer to this day, ET, he ran with this idea of, you know, yield farming is cool. Yield farming is hot. So again, this was 6 weeks ago. So this was before a lot of this food coin craziness. But you know, another thing that's hot, that's NFTs. So the idea was born to let's mash up NFTs with yield farming. And that could go a bunch of different ways, right? But what we decided to do was just this simple concept of locking up the meme token, thus providing value, thus providing utility to this token that we just created. So you lock up meme token and you print NFTs. So you're able to farm or mine these brand new NFTs. So that's really the origin of that product. And from time we launched, from the time between the tweet and we launched to mainnet, this meme farming protocol was 10 days. So in just a week and a half from community inception to live product launch on mainnet Ethereum, 10 days. And so that's just been, that kind of set the pace literally for our development speed. So it's like every other day or so we launch something new, whether it's a new pool, new art, new projects, new partnerships. It's just really for the last, again, since that. So it's been a month since launching the protocol. Our pace of development for this community project has been extremely fast, all things considered. Somebody said we brought DeFi release schedules to NFTs, and it's.
How many of you are there? Because you mentioned there's one lead developer, then there's you. You're kind of the CEO of the project, one could say, although it's not a traditional company, but some sort of DAO. But yeah, who else is there? And how come you're able to ship so fast?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting schedule. It's an interesting situation. As you mentioned, you could call me the CEO, but it's really more of a decentralized, at least for now, it's a very decentralized organization. And I've just kind of stepped up and become the quarterback of this thing just because I have experience in running companies and creating products. So I kind of took it upon myself a little bit. So that everyone knows there's kind of this sliding scale of decentralization. A lot gets thrown to the DAO, so to speak. Other things, especially when it comes to products and development decisions and product decisions, some of that is done, you know, with the smaller group of individuals. Yeah, so there's what we call the Citadel, the meme Citadel. And that's, again, another joke, another meme, because a lot of these groups are creating citadels. And it's just this, you know, this small group of elite VIPs that that hold a lot of tokens and they make the decisions. So it was really a meme, but that's where a lot of, a lot of these decisions and discussions happen. So we have the general Telegram, we also have a Discord, but we have this smaller group of around 50 or so. And the requirements to get into the meme Citadel is that you hold 100 meme tokens in your wallet. And there's this cool product called Collabland, collab.land, that help you create this permission Telegram group. So it's a bot, Telegram bot, that actually checks your wallet just to make sure that you hold the correct number of tokens. And if you dip below the threshold, then you're kicked from the Citadel. But it's this way to create a bunch of decision makers. It's our DAO, quote unquote. It's our light DAO, where a bunch of token holders with significant amounts. I hate to call them whales, but in a sense, there are a number of whales in here that we join and we discuss and we keep people updated and make some decisions. Hey, should we go with this artist? Should we go with that artist? We have a bunch of ideas. Which one do we launch first? Just brainstorm new ideas and initiatives. So it's this interesting interesting balance between the developers and product people making product decisions, and then the Citadel providing guidance and, you know, tapping into that community. So yeah, it's certainly interesting. It's been a crash course in like decentralized, you know, managing a decentralized organization and making sure that everyone's voice feels heard, yet still making the right product decisions and the right tech decisions. So yeah, it's been fun.
Would you say that everyone in that Citadel Telegram group is very engaged and contributes to the project on, let's say, like not a full-time basis, but like contributes in some way, whether it's marketing or governance or product, or are there some people who are less active, let's say?
Yeah, there's a spectrum for sure. There are a number of people that are just less active, that are just there to watch and listen and have, you know, maybe some alpha in terms of what's coming next from the protocol and make their own decisions. And that's within their right. But there are a number of us, a couple dozen or so, that have said, okay, obviously we have vested interest in the future of this project. We're going to do whatever we can to grow it, to nurture it. So a lot of people have stepped up and said, hey, I don't have any development skills, but I can manage a Telegram group, or I can create our Discord, or I can create memes. Or some people are saying, hey, I'm a biz dev guy, so I can go call potential partners. Or hey, I'm a data analyst, so I can run our analytics. So there are a number of people that have popped up. It's almost like Lord of the Rings, where everyone's just kind of stepping up and giving their time and resources and value add. And I got to say, like, this community, I'm the face of this thing, but it really wouldn't be anywhere without this community, both the Citadel, both the smaller group of people, and then just the general public community. But speaking of this Citadel, they are a generous bunch. I mean, if they've been holding for a long time, they've likely profited. They've done okay for themselves, and they didn't dump when it probably made sense to. And they've been around for a while. And one of the stories that we could probably get into if we have time, and it's up to you, but like when someone mints an NFT, they can then, it's up to them what they want to do, right? Like they can hold it. Maybe there's future utility on the platform. They can go sell it on OpenSea or another marketplace. That happens a lot. Someone takes it to OpenSea and they flip it. So they mined it for free, or essentially by locking up meme, and they're able to go sell it. There have been a few sizable sales, especially with our legendary cards. And some of these sales have gone for 32 ETH, 40 ETH. There was one 77.7 ETH. So one of our NFTs went and sold for 77.7 ETH. At the time, that was almost $30,000 USD.
That's incredible.
Which is just insane and mind-blowing. But was really cool, the person who ended up selling for 77.7 ETH, they took a majority of the proceeds from that sale and they gave it back to the meme community. I've profited from this. Let's just give it back. So there's been a lot of people giving back and just donating to the artists. We were able to create a Gitcoin matching program, give back to the community. It's been really refreshing, especially when this project started out from like this yield farming degen space, you know, traders just looking for alpha. The community's been just, again, very gracious in their donation. It's been a fun group to be part of.
Yeah, so just so everyone understands the product, I have it opened up on my computer right now. So it basically looks a bit like an eBay marketplace or something, just that instead of like, yeah, some random products, it's actually cards that are displayed. And instead of being able to buy them, you can only get these cards by staking meme. So meme is the token of the meme project, and you can only stake a maximum of 5 meme tokens. So this makes it kind of fair also, because no single whale can just mint like all the NFTs. And basically, the longer you stake your meme tokens, the more points you accrue. Every day you accrue some pineapple points. And so yeah, the points are called pineapple. And then you can, after a couple of days, you can redeem or claim the lowest level of NFT, which is called, I think it's a grail, right? Like the lowest level of NFT is called...
Yeah, it's the relic card, the meme grail.
Exactly. And then the more pineapple points you accrue, the more valuable cards you can claim. I think then there's the common card and then there's legendary cards. So this gives these NFTs kind of a value on the secondary market instantly, because some are just way harder to get and hence they sell for much, much more on the secondary market, like OpenSea or Rarible. So the way I described meme in my blog post is I compared it a bit to, like, there's a gold mining farm somewhere. The only way to get gold out of a mining, the only way to get it out is a pig. And the only problem is there's only 28,000 pigs. So in the case of meme, the only way to get the meme NFTs is to get meme tokens. So it's kind of a it's kind of a mean of production, right? The meme tokens.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, there's a ton of utility in this token now, because right now it's the only asset that will unlock these NFTs. So yeah, you're right. It's the only way to generate these things is to own the meme token and lock it up.
And because they are blockchain tokens, they can also be, like you said before, immediately sold on secondary marketplaces like OpenSea or Rarible. What was actually the reason that these meme NFTs were listed on Rarible much later than on OpenSea? Because they're quite standard blockchain tokens. So was there any interoperability issue there? Or
yeah, so the question of why OpenSea first and then Rarible later. So yeah, it's actually a technical issue. So these cards that we've created, all the meme NFTs are actually ERC 1155. So that's a token standard, right? The most common NFT is ERC 721s. That's what most of these cards will be. And that's something that OpenSea and Rarible support is 721. Our cards, because how we decided to do it, give us some flexibility for the future. We prefer the 1155, and that's kind of a new standard. It was created by the guys at Engine, and it was the best of both worlds. It borrows some tech from the ERC-20, some tech from the 721. It allows us to maintain like provable scarcity of like there could be, once we launch 10, there could only be 10. We can't mint anymore. So that allows us to be a little bit more flexible. So that's the issue there. Rarible didn't by default support ERC 1155s. So we were working with them on adding support, and then now they support it. So you can find all meme NFTs on Rarible now as well.
Gotcha. And another question I had, so I listened to this podcast of Rolex, one of the CEOs of Rolex, and I learned that Rolex watches, one of the reasons they have this incredible value also on the secondary market, so even when they're used, is that Rolex watches are actually quite rare. Like the company only produces a limited number of Rolex watches each year. So there's always like much more demand than there's supply of Rolex watches. And I was wondering, because right now it seems like you kind of supplied a random number or seemingly random number of NFTs on the market. You started with the Genesis collections of like cards of crypto influencers like Vitalik or Andre, CZ, Sergey. And then you now started an artist collection where you collaborated with a famous artist in the crypto digital art space. Will you at some point introduce like a kind of predictable schedule of NFTs that people can kind of expect and calculate how valuable each NFT is given how rarely it is produced?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And you know, as mentioned, this whole thing started as like an experiment. So we started with a small collection of the Genesis cards, and we were planning on doing a few different experimental products, but this one really just took off. So we just kept adding to the cards, right? The Genesis collection influencer cards. But then a couple weeks ago, we decided to launch the artist series, which our first artist collab with Sven. And that went really well too. A lot of people on the art collectible side really, really enjoyed that. And those cards are starting to mint now. And then we did a collaboration with LA Blockchain Summit, which is an event coming up. And the cards give you exclusive access to special related events. So yeah, we're just continuing to see, okay, where can we find value? Where can we provide, where can we innovate and drive this thing forward? And we see that the people love these cards, so we'll continue to make those. At some point, the Genesis collection will end and we'll start the next collection. But right now, we're just trying to feel out the community and see where they would like this to go. Again, it's very like user-focused, community-driven. So it's really up to the community. Do they want to see more rare cards? Do they want to see more legendary cards? One thing that we're hearing a lot from the community is that this minimum token amount to enter is pretty steep now that the price is getting up there, price of the token. So originally we created this minimum amount that in order to participate, in order to stake, in order to play our game, you had to lock up at least one token. When we built this, the token price was around $25 US. And now the price sits around $750 or $800 US. So that's a steep price if you just wanted to get in and experiment and play and see what this thing is all about. So in future pools, and in fact, in the event pool that we recently launched with LA Blockchain Summit, there is no minimum. So you could actually enter in as little of the meme token as you want. So it could be 0.001 or whatever it is. So we're lowering the barrier to entry, and we want to do that with future pools as well so that anyone can come in and play the game. As you mentioned, the maximum to play in any of our pools, the maximum amount you could add is 5. And that was with the intention of limiting whale activity and allowing the average user to get some of these higher valued cards. But we'd like to lower that as well and start playing around with the economics of it. Maybe we bring the minimum down to 1, or sorry, the maximum down to 1 so that it's level playing field for new pools and new cards. So yeah, again, it's just working this out, finding the right model, coming up with something that might be a little bit predictable, just so you can start to value these things. However, there's something about the unpredictability of this whole thing, these last 6 weeks, that gives it some kind of, you know, extra magic. So it's we see the value in kind of standardizing some things, however, keeping the magic alive with just random airdrops or of NFT cards or surprise drops of new arts or surprise collaborations, just to kind of keep people on their toes. So
I also did one airdrop of one NFT I had minted with Crypto Testers.
Oh, yeah.
It was quite popular. Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask is, have you ever looked at the data? Like, are people flipping those NFT cards that they mint immediately on the secondary market? Like, do people who are really active in this protocol see it as a way to quickly make some ETH, in that they sell the NFT on OpenSea, gain, I don't know, 1 ETH, 2 ETH, and then they go on to mint the second NFT and sell that again? Or are people really kind of hodling on to the NFTs and think that, you know, this NFTs will accrue in value?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. I would say it's mixed. We see a lot of people that just mint it and then immediately goes to OpenSea just so that they can profit. In a sense, that's almost like what we would consider yield farming, right? Where you lock up your assets. You know, previously it was you lock up some asset, you earn maybe its new governance token, you earn the comp or the Wi-Fi or the Uni token, like whatever. And then you go and you just dump it right away because that's probably going to be the highest price that it's available. So there's a little bit of that. And then you get the mix. You get the collector that says, hey, this is going to be really cool. I think it's going to go up in value, or I want this to be in my collection because the art is cool. We're seeing a mix of both. And I think that's because our community is made up. Our user base is a mix between these DeFi folks and the NFT community. And that's something I think is pretty unique. And what one thing that I think our platform did really well compared to others is that we brought together both the yield farmers, you know, people experienced in DeFi, and then these NFT collectors that really just collect art and they believe in the this tech and the scarcity of this art that's ownership is proven on chain, and some things that this tech allows affords us for the first time. So it was really cool. So when we brought in the DeFi folks, a lot of them told me that this is the first time that they've owned an NFT. I thought that was really exciting. And then we heard from some of the NFT people, and they said, this is the first time I've used Uniswap, or this is the first time that I've participated in staking assets. So it was great. It was this kind of coming together of two sides. So that's why we see the activity after mining split between those two groups.
Yeah. NFTs are really a hot debate topic at the moment in the crypto space. I would really like to hear your thoughts on them and yeah, how promising you think they are. Because some people point out that you can also simply save the image of an NFT on your computer and then you also own the art. What would you respond to those critics?
Yeah, I mean, I understand where they're coming from. It sounds counterintuitive. It sounds kind of silly. However, I believe in it. I don't know. For me, it was the same kind of paradigm shift that gets someone hooked into crypto. It's money is working fine, especially if you're in a country like the US. I have no problem moving money around or sending money using Venmo or whatever. So money isn't a concern, but you can think about other industries. You can think about other countries. You can think about, okay, given different political situation, there might be a time where I may need to be in control of my own money. So you can start to see the value that this technology brings, the technology of blockchain to money, to finance. What kind of struck me about NFTs in general was something similar. It's like, well, how do you prove ownership? How do you prove assets? If you think long-term, decades down the road, you're going to need to be able to prove certain assets, whether it's we live in a Ready Player One situation in VR or where just everything's completely digital. Like there's going to be a need for this type of, it's beyond art. It for me, this is just an awesome use case that is needed right now is collectibles and art and fine art and even real world art. But it just goes into how do you track things and how do you have this structured, almost like API that allows you to track the movement and the ownership and the previous owners. How do you track that in a decentralized way? That's I think the long vision and why I'm so bullish. And I think it's honestly the NFTs will bring mainstream users to DeFi, and that's why I'm so focused and committed and on this project, is because I think meme is going to have a major role to play in bringing on mainstream.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think that also the difference with, of course, you can save the image on your computer and then you own it locally. You can even print it out and hang it on your wall, but you don't own the digital representation on the blockchain of it, and hence you can also not sell it. Like the image that you saved on your computer has no economic value because anyone, like, first of all, it doesn't exist as a token on the blockchain. And second of all, it's not the original from painter or like the digital artist. The same way that you can print out Mona Lisa on your computer, but it doesn't have any economic value. Personally, it also made me think about the value of like art in general for the first time. But yeah, I would also like to finish by discussing how you view the future of meme. What interesting projects or developments can we expect in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, that's what everyone likes to know, and that's really fun because this really could go any direction, right? So that's kind of the fun stuff, is to brainstorm about where this thing could go. I hate to give too much away, but yeah, expect more experimentation with NFTs and DeFi. Expect more artist collaborations, some really cool artists, some of the top artists in this space, not just NFT artists, but musicians and IRL talent, like IRL artists and a bunch of new artists. So I see this as being just like a platform for launching new talent, re-engaging communities of existing talent, partnerships with DeFi protocols that want to get involved, a reward system that says, hey, instead of just giving you some governance tokens, why don't we also give you some NFTs? So there's like attention all across the board. We're talking to a number of different groups in and around DeFi content owners, IP characters, and different animation groups that are not even on the blockchain yet that want to get involved, that are reaching out. So there's a lot of cool things. This is more than just like the crypto kitties for DeFi, right? We're doing more than just printing NFTs here. We're doing something special with the mechanics of this thing, leading to a bunch of different cool things that you could do to engage different communities. So we'll continue to be popping out our NFTs, but look for more like longer term plays, platform plays, new and exciting initiatives, new interfaces, new ways to get involved. Again, we don't want to just target the whale. We want to target everyone, additional assets that you could lock up. So there's really only limited to our imagination. So that's when it's fun. That's when it's fun building products, is when there's so much room to play.
For sure. I think one of the big promises of NFTs is also the interoperability aspect. So the fact that you can take those NFTs and import them in other blockchain applications, for example, a game or a virtual world, a VR world, or something like Decentraland. Have you thought about any experiments in that space already, or is that more in the future?
It's something we're thinking about. And to be honest, we've had a couple conversations with some of those groups. And I think there's something there for sure. I love it. I'm definitely open to those things. So whether it's, you can think of a number of different collaborations with these virtual spaces. And that's maybe there's a museum set up and that's where you go to view some of these NFTs. Or maybe there's a way that we could, on our side, in our product, you could lock up meme tokens to create, different skins or different items that you can then go take into these virtual worlds. So there's a lot of fun stuff that we can do. I see that as an obvious place to explore in the coming month or two.
When you said the museum, I immediately thought about a virtual, a museum in a virtual world where people would have to buy their ticket and the people who lended their NFT artworks out to the museum would get a share of the ticket price. That'd be cool.
That's genius. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, lastly, I wanted to ask, because last week the price was went quite parabolic after the listing on Poloniex. I think it touched $2,000 per meme token, which is crazy. And now it went back a bit. I think it's back at 800. Have you seen any, loss of interest in the group? Or is it really like a tight-knit community that doesn't really care about the price and just keeps shipping and is really focused on the project?
Yeah, I would say, again, there's a mix of both. It's really hard to ignore the price, of course, because that's what everyone else is interested in. And that's what brings in a lot of people into the community. Come for the price, stay for the memes. But for me personally, it's like, hey, let's just focus. I try not to look at the price too much. It's like, hey, the reason I'm doing this is not to just pump up the price and sell off, right? I see long-term value in what we've created so far, not just with the product, not just with the art, but with the community and the brand. So I see the long-term play. So I see this, like, especially looking at intraday or just the day-to-day changes in price. It wastes time. I'm trying to always confirm to the community and to especially to the Citadel that, like, hey guys, try not to look at the price too much. If you're here, it's because you believe in the long term. Let's focus on building product. I think that's what separates us, is that we have a founder that is not anonymous. We have someone that have a background of building large scale products and, motivating a team around one idea. Let's just keep pushing. A lot of people are responding well around the space. Users are responding well. We are more than the price. Price is a lagging indicator. They don't know everything. They're not ready for what's to come. A lot of people, because we've named ourselves Meme and we have a pineapple as our icon, a lot of people take us for granted. They don't realize what's the tech that's being built or the community that's being built. They don't realize what our roadmap looks like. So of course the price wouldn't reflect exactly what we're building. It's silly to just to just keep looking at that. So I try to confirm, heads down, keep building, keep growing the community. And we're on our way to building something really cool.
Are you going to focus full-time on this project since you're also working on Consensus? Or is this
a night? That's a very good question. Yeah, right now Consensus has been very gracious and very flexible, and they've allowed me some flexibility to work on both Consensus projects and the meme project. So right now we're just taking it one day at a time and seeing where this goes. It may be a situation where it becomes a full-time thing. It may be something where it continues to run in this kind of balanced situation. Yeah, I think in the next couple of weeks we'll really figure out, okay, is this continue to be a decentralized organization? Do we go and build a company and raise money on top of it? So a lot of this is to be figured out, but there's certainly potential here for a whole team of people working full time on this thing. Yeah, just to confirm, so far it's been just a handful of people, myself included, including the developers, working part time nights and weekends to get this thing moving forward. I think there's more than enough of work here for a full team of full-time developers and product people and support people. So that's one option that we're exploring right now is how do we kind of scale this and how do we take it to the next level?
It shows again what an amazing company Consensus is, because I think there are a couple of developers like you who are just building projects on the side, and it seems like it's a company that a lot of flexibilities to their employees, which is cool for the space.
Yeah, it hasn't always been that way. So kudos to Consensus for sure. They've been really really flexible and helpful in this situation.
Cool. Thank you so much, Jordan. I'm rooting for Meme and continuing to follow the updates.
Yeah, great being here. Great to chat. Appreciate even the early days, you and your blog were very supportive and helpful in bringing new users aboard. So definitely wanted to join you on this podcast, and I really appreciate the time.
Thanks, Jordan. See ya.
All right. Take care.
Hey, it's me again. I hope you liked this episode. If you did, please feel free to share it with your friends and family or give us a follow on Twitter or LinkedIn. And if you have some feedback, reach out to me. I'd love to hear it.